This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Very best bits of today's show from Wednesday, April the 14th, put together by producer Shruti Rajendra. Morning, Shruti.
Morning.
So we have got Dr. Farida Al-Hassani, haven't we? She is the official spokesperson for health here in the UAE in many ways.
Yes, and she also reiterating the message from UAE authorities that we've heard over and over again that during Ramadan, please avoid large social gatherings. And she also spoke about how last year we saw this trend, you know, sort of go back. We practiced the social distancing for about a month and a half, and then again, the cases sort of spiked up during Ramadan. So she's just reminding everyone to be careful and be safe during the holy month.
Also been talking about the situation in Lebanon, Shruti, this morning, which is very, very serious at the moment. Tom and I will give you the details, but inflation at 155%. I mean, even a fattoush salad is beyond the means of many people in Lebanon at the moment. We'll give you details on that. And talking takeovers as well. PwC Middle East says they're booming at the moment. We hear from them. We've also been hearing from the guys at KOJ, the big Saudi retailer, who just bought 45 body shop stores here in the UAE. And we asked the guy, why are you buying stores? Everyone's buying online. And he said, we love stores. We're buying 45 and we're going to open another 20. And I guess it's because there are some things that you buy. So you want to scratch and sniff, don't you?
Yes, that is true. I remember you asking about this experience of, you know, why would people buy it online when, especially things like body shop where you need to smell it. I recently bought a perfume and I've been looking at it online for maybe a month, but I actually went to the store, tried it on, and then I bought it because even though you know you want it, you still want to experience the smell before you actually make the purchase.
Yeah, it's true. And every retailer who comes on seems to talk about, oh, it's got to be experiential. It's become a bit of a cliche, a bit of a buzzword at the moment. But for something like that, I kind of get it. During the show, full disclosure this morning, I bought some stationery. I bought 12 pencils, an electric pencil sharpener, which I'm quite excited about, a fountain pen and some cartridges. You don't need an experience to go and buy that stuff.
No.
Click, 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 Moleskin notebook, bang, it'll arrive tomorrow. Happy days. But if it's watermelon and passion fruit body butter, you want to try it first, don't you? Try before you buy.
That's very oddly specific.
All that to come. First up, though, a bit of decorum. The grown-up in the house, Serena Kelly, has today's top stories.
Ask Serena.
Hey, Serena, how
morning,
are you?
Morning, guys.
Good to have you with us this morning. We're going to get onto cases and vaccines in a second, but first of all, Tom and I were talking earlier on about the 100 million meals campaign, checking the numbers, and we nearly fell off our chairs. Just remind us what this campaign is and then give us an update on what's happened since we were last in the studio.
Okay, so the 100 million meals campaign is basically upping the ante from the 10 million meals campaign, which was launched by the UAE last year. So the idea is it's supposed to be helping those in need, providing meals everywhere across the world. So the idea is you can go to 100millionmeals.ae and donate in denominations of 10, all the way up to 500, 10, 50, 100, 300. And your donation, one dirham equals one meal. So this time yesterday, we were looking at figures of more than 11 million meals that had been donated. And just checking before coming into the studio, we've crossed more than 33 million meals that have been donated. 33,942,649, to be exact. You've had the latest contribution, or large contribution, I should say, came from a charity yesterday, the Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum Humanitarian and Charity Establishment. 20 million dirhams they donated to the campaign. But yeah, if you want to get on board, 100millionmeals.ae, or you can call 800-4999. But it's just such a great initiative considering the time that we're in at the moment with COVID-19, because it is very difficult, obviously, with the holy month of Ramadan. One of the main things that, you know, happen during this time is the idea of giving and caring and thinking of others and zakat and donations. And it can be quite difficult because obviously you can't share food. We're a cashless society at the moment purely because of the transfer of the virus. So having a established campaign like this that you know it's going to reach those that need it, then it's a great way of actually combating the situation.
I'm looking at the website now and I'm trying to imagine the scenes in the Sheikh Mohammed Charity Foundation yesterday, because you've got the options, 10 meals, 10 dirhams, 100 meals, 100 dirhams. And the highest one is 500 dirhams 500 meals. And then there's a box that says other. And they're just going, right then, here we go. 20 million. Diwa were 10 million the day before.
Exactly.
20 million yesterday.
It's just brilliant. But it's great because it's like no matter what you contribute, it all matters. It all counts. You can go as little as 10 or like you were just saying, but it makes no difference because one dirham equals a meal. And that is just so important.
Serena, thank you very much indeed. Right, let's get to the cases and the vaccine doses number. The doses number was really good yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But first of all, COVID cases.
So this time last week, we were looking at figures of 1,988. Latest new cases to be announced, 2,022. That's after more than 266,000 tests were conducted. The figures, recoveries, 1,731 announced yesterday. 4 fatalities as well. And your active cases gone up a little bit to 14,254 now.
Right then. In terms of vaccines, the number leapt yesterday, didn't it?
So we had more than 118,000 doses just administered in the past 24 hours. So we're now at more than 9.1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine that have been administered in the country so far. Distribution rate of 92.58 doses per 100 people.
Question came in earlier. Tom, I'm sure you saw this one. Total vaccine administered. Is that the figure for people who have had 2 doses or is that individual doses? I think I know the answer, but that 9-ish million figure is the number of doses rather than the number of people who've had 2 doses, isn't it?
There's no actual confirmation on that, but that's what you would, because for every dose, it's counted.
Yeah.
So it'd be your first jab, your second jab. But it is probably a question you could probably pose to Dr. Farida when you're talking to her if you want.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
I think, you know, she might be able to clarify that.
Other stories that you're looking at this morning, the new study on COVID-19 in the UAE, Serena.
It's researchers at Al Ain University. They're working on targeting the main viral substance of COVID-19 via drug inhibitors. So the work is based on the discovery of small organic compounds capable of inhibiting one of the enzymes, which is critical in the infection cycle of COVID-19 when people actually, it transfers to them. So what they hope to discover is small compounds effective against the coronavirus. And then that will be the nucleus or center for developing future projects for an effective drug. So university officials, they've said the research is currently in its second stage. They're working with Abu Dhabi University, New York as well. But yeah, just another great development that hopefully will lead on to further treatments that could help those fight off COVID-19.
There's so many studies happening, aren't there, Serena, around the world. You've got this one here in the UAE, which is great. We need more information. There's another one, and you touched on this in the headlines. It's a study on mixing and matching vaccines.
Because I know that's something that listeners have posed to you guys as well as a question saying, you know, is that possible? Because obviously right now it's something that is not advised. Please stick with one vaccine. But of course, studies are ongoing. So they're looking into it. So a study in the UK looking into mixing and matching coronavirus vaccines they're adding 2 more to the mix. So the trial was launched with AstraZeneca and Pfizer, and this was in the UK in February. Now they're adding Moderna and Novavax vaccines into the mix as well. So people taking part, they will get 1 jab followed by a different one a few weeks later to see if it affects the immune response. Now, this is Professor Snape. He is the trial's chief investigator.
These mixed schedules might well be the key to getting 2 doses into as many people in the world as possible. That's why these data are vital. This is the first study in the world that is looking at these across these different combinations. And as I say, there's a lot of interest in these studies internationally.
I think you've also got to look at it as like, apart from efficacy and creating antibodies and your cells getting the code in regards to fighting COVID-19, can you imagine the repercussions on stocks and development? Like if 2 vaccines can work together, the idea like, okay, we don't have enough to give out Moderna, but this works with Pfizer, so we're going to give you your second jab here. The domino effect would be incredible for those countries that haven't been able to afford to purchase vaccines and are relying on the initiatives from the WHO and other countries providing the vaccines for them.
Very quickly, though, I do want to get an update on an international story from a couple of weeks ago. The Suez Canal. We've kind of forgotten about that, haven't
yeah.
we? But what's the deal?
So more than 2 weeks after it was freed, the ship that blocked the Suez Canal has not been given clearance to leave the water. away. So discussions over compensation claims are currently underway. So the Suez Canal Authority, they're conducting investigations. The Ever Given has been in a lake separating two sections of the canal since it was dislodged March 29th. Now, according to reports, the losses from the week ending March 29th that the Ever Given was stuck and blocking other traffic through the canal estimated at $95 million in lost transit fees. And there are also the costs to free the ship and other expenses to reimburse as well. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those watch this space.
It's more than that, though, isn't it? Because the Egyptian, there's a court order against it over in Egypt. Basically, it's been impounded. Mm. We're being very polite here. It's been impounded in this lake. And to get it out, they've got to pay $900 million. In compensation as a result of losses. That's what they're asking for in this.
It reminds me a little bit, you know, if you've had a night out and you leave your car because you're being sensible, you go back the next day, and I've had this, and you go back at lunchtime, it's 20 dirhams an hour, you just 350 dirhams, and they won't give you your car back until you pay up. It's a little bit like that. Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, we are. No shortage of recommendations coming through from the latest government media briefing. Last night, we heard from the UAE Federal Youth Authority, the FYA, highlighting the role of young people in helping break the chain of COVID-19 infections. That was also on the back of many recommendations about what people should be doing during the holy month of Ramadan 2021 to curb the increase in cases and the spread of COVID-19. To that end, people here of all ages are being reminded to avoid large social gatherings during Ramadan and please diligently follow COVID-19 safety protocols that we're all too aware of. To tell us more about these recommendations, we're joined now by the Department Manager, Communicable Diseases, in Abu Dhabi Public Health Centre, the official spokesperson for the health sector here in the UAE. It is a warm welcome and Ramadan Kareem to Dr. Farida Al Hassani.
Good morning, Tom, and Ramadan Kareem to you and all our listeners today.
Dr. Farida, lovely to have you join us on the show. Just how important is it for us to continue to focus on what we've been doing so well here in the UAE over the course of the next 4 weeks?
It's really extremely important that we stick to regulations and precautionary measures during Ramadan. Just to remind everyone about Ramadan last year, where we had experienced the excess and increase in cases because of certain behaviors that we had, social behaviors mainly because of people like to get in groups and visit each other. So we hope that the experience during this month is with more wise wisdom and knowledge of people that they should avoid, especially the large gatherings, and stick to more of family, small numbers of people together.
In terms of the message coming through from Abu Dhabi Public Health Centre, but also Department of Health and all the health authorities here in the UAE, we're hearing again and again and again the reiteration of please remember the precautionary measures against COVID-19. Is that a message that needs to be reiterated time and time again, or is everyone fully aware of those precautionary measures at the moment?
I think it's still critical to remind people about that, because sometimes people feel more lax about those measures because certainly many factors. One of them is some people, when they after they get vaccinated, they think that it's okay to be less cautious about taking measures, precautionary measures for COVID. Just to highlight that vaccine is important, but it's not a total replacement of the precautionary measures. We are safe with taking the vaccine and still sticking to the precautionary measures.
In terms of the mistakes, and from what you're seeing, the data that you and your colleagues are getting, are people more likely to make mistakes, to become a little more lax during Ramadan? And what are the most common mistakes that people are making at the moment?
We understand that all people like to be, the social life during Ramadan is totally different from other months. People try to be connected with others, visit each other, And this is the norms that we had before COVID. So this is Ramadan this year is the second time where we have to live with Ramadan and have some kind of changes to our norms. We understand that this is difficult sometimes, but I think the UAE experience in fighting COVID is really unique and successful. And one of the important factors of its success is that people really comply with the precautionary measures and support the government to fight the disease. So we need to stick together and continue our cautious measures for the time being until this COVID outbreak ends.
It is obviously a time of reflection for everyone here in the country, for so many worldwide as well. Questions that are coming through, and I think a lot of people are seeing that there are a couple of time changes with regards to health clinics, with regards to screening and vaccination centres. Will vaccinations and screenings continue throughout the holy month of Ramadan? And how important is it for people to remember to get vaccinated?
Well, the journey of vaccination is not ended. Yes, we had really breaking records when it comes to the numbers and the percentage of people get vaccinated in UAE. However, we believe that it's important to continue to advocate for vaccines and advise people who did not get the vaccine until now to take it, because we would like to reach the highest possible number of people getting vaccinated. At least 90%. We don't think that we are now, we did not until now reach the herd immunity. So please spread the message and try to share your experience. If you took the vaccine and if you didn't, we advise you to take the vaccine as soon as possible.
Obviously, Dr. Farida, you'll understand that we get a number of questions each and every morning about vaccines, the vaccine availability across the whole of the UAE, different types of vaccines. Can you assure all of our listeners this morning that vaccines are readily available here, the variety of different vaccines?
Yes, I would like to assure everyone that we have really a variety of at least four vaccines are available currently in different centres in UAE. They will continue to be available during Ramadan. The working hours might change, so it's better that you book in advance or check the timing. But definitely they are there, and we are really keen to get most of our community vaccinated.
I think you raise a very valid point there about checking in advance, be it timings of clinics, screening centres or otherwise. Is that also advice that you give to people that might be a little bit confused about the rules for gathering during Ramadan? Do you encourage them to get in touch with the authorities to ask what is permissible and what is not permissible?
Definitely, if they have doubt, they can check with different authorities about the rules and regulations. If there are any health advisors required, then they can call definitely the call centers for each health entity, depending on where they are, which emirate.
And finally, Dr. Farida, you've been very kind to help us out over the course of the last 12, 15 months on so many occasions. What is your message on the second day of the holy month of Ramadan to all the residents and citizens of the UAE ahead of Ramadan?
Well, I will advise everyone to stay safe and stay healthy by abiding to the regulatory measures, precautionary measures for COVID. It includes wearing face masks all the time if they are out, and avoiding the majlis and public gatherings or large gatherings as much as they can, and also avoid the exchange of food between homes and get vaccinated if you didn't until now. So wish you all to stay safe and stay healthy and be happy. Thank you.
Dr. Farida Al-Hassani, Department Manager, Communicable Diseases in Abu Dhabi and Public Health Centre, and the official spokesperson for the health sector in the UAE. Thank you very much indeed for joining us live on the show. And again, Ramadan Kareem to you and your team. So stay safe is the message, but stay responsible as well is the advice that people are being asked to heed at present.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Listen, it's not an unrelated story that I picked up on from the local or regional media. media, and I think you've picked up on this one as well. The situation in Lebanon, Tom, is really serious, isn't it? Arab News has this headline: Ramadan in Lebanon limited due to high inflation and virus restrictions. It says that social events, traditions and gatherings usually celebrating during Ramadan in Lebanon, very different this year. Leading up to the holy month, preparations in Beirut were very different. Charity foundations usually rely on the month of Ramadan every year to collect donations, but the country's ability to give is fleeting. The World Bank says that more than 50%, half of the Lebanese people, are now living underneath the poverty line. And The National has a similar story this morning. It's about inflation. 155% inflation in Lebanon in the month of February. And that means the value of the Lebanese pound in practical terms is plummeting. Theoretically, and I looked at the Central Bank of Lebanon website this morning, you can buy a dollar for 1,507 Lebanese pounds. That's the official rate. But no, you can't do that anywhere. On the black market, the real market, it's between 12 and 15,000. And that means that the price of a kilo of beef is 70,000 Lebanese pounds. A kilo of tout chicken is 50,000 pounds on the first day of Ramadan. And if you think about the average salary of about 670,000 Lebanese pounds per month, it's just unsustainable at the moment. The situation there is very difficult. I know you've been looking at Lebanon as well, Tom.
It's just the numbers thing that gets me. You know, it's a country, and Beirut is a city that I've had the pleasure to visit on numerous occasions. Love it over there. It's just so sad. Love the people. Got a lot of friends from the region. Love, of course, who reside here in the UAE. How many warnings do we need? You know, this is the latest warning from the IMF. This is on the back of warnings from the World Bank. This is on the back of warnings from the WHO as well. And just the numbers. I mean, the currency rate is difficult to comprehend at the moment because of, yeah, you see the official rate, but then you ask people what the grey market rate is as well. I mean, we're talking wheelbarrows full of cash now, aren't we, for a loaf of bread, etc. We've seen yet another surge in prices as well on the back of this latest findings from the IMF and the Consumer Price Index. Basically, so February of this year, prices at restaurants and hotels surging 618%. Clothing and footwear were next, 612% increase. This was in February of this year. Furnishing and household equipment, food and non-alcoholic beverages, tobacco, miscellaneous goods and services, transportation, all of them going up in triple-digit numbers as well in February this year. And I was trying to sort of work out, and again, when you read it on a piece of paper, you go, oh, times must be tough. But then I said, okay, wow, would you imagine if you and I went to lunch later on today, and literally from last month to this month, the price of lunch had gone up by 618%. I mean, how do you cope?
It's devastating, isn't it? And the stats keep on coming. One that I'm looking at, and Arab News reports this, is that a fattoush salad for a small family was 6,000 Lebanese pounds last Ramadan. This Ramadan, it's £18,000. And that means that the cost of a daily salad during this year's Ramadan would be about 82% of the minimum wage in Lebanon. And it's just so incongruous with a country that, you know, we've known for 20 years that produces some of the brightest and sharpest minds, the most hardworking and creative people in this region can be in that situation. Look, the economists at the IMF say Lebanon has to help itself before the international community can help Lebanon. Right. They're calling for political reforms before the economic aid comes in. We know Emmanuel Macron of France has been there. It is a sanitary reminder of what is happening during the holy month of Ramadan. You're listening to The Business Breakfast, Dubai Eye 103.8.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk about takeovers now, because they seem to be booming here in the Middle East at the moment. We just heard half an hour ago from the boss of KOJ, the big Saudi retailer. They are taking over the Body Shop retail operations here in the UAE, 45 stores, which they plan to expand to 65. It is by no means the only deal that we've seen so far this year. We know that because PwC, the professional services firm, have done some research on this. Joining us on the line now via Microsoft Teams is the deals market leader and regional valuations leader for PwC Middle East, Romil Radia. Morning, Romil.
Good morning.
So, first of all, let's look at the numbers. A significant increase in takeover deals Q1 this year versus Q1 last year. Give us the numbers and then we'll drill into why this is happening.
So, Richard, I think the numbers you referred to earlier as well were from a report from Refinitiv, I think, which is just highlighting that in their analysis, transactions or M&A had hit 17 billion in the first quarter. Now, our own analysis was looking just at 2020 compared to the prior year, which did highlight an increase in M&A in the region compared to the prior year, which was a slight difference to some of the other territories around the world. But that sentiment from Q4 of 2020 has very much continued into Q1 of this year. And the stats either from Emerging Market, Refinitiv, our own analysis, supports that trend of deals completing and new processes starting as sentiment has started to improve across the region.
So I'm trying to get a sense, Romil, of what kind of deals we're talking about. Here's one I was thinking at from last year, and I know you've been looking at 2020, was the massive merger for my parent company, Dubai Holding and Miras. Now, both effectively, you could say, part of the Dubai Inc., government-related entities. Do you include those kind of mega mergers in this data? Because they can really skew things, can't they?
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't know exactly what data, the Refinitiv data that you mentioned is relates to. But yeah, typically they will include, when you're just pulling off data around deals that have taken place, that will include data that is where companies have been taken private. So where Dubai Entertainment has been taken private, the one you mentioned, some of those will undoubtedly be included. Sometimes the deal values may not always be disclosed, but where it is taken, a listed company taken private, or you have those mergers, they will tend to be included in some form, absolutely.
So let's look at it from a different perspective, Romil. What's actually happening in practice? You're the deals market leader for PwC in the Middle East. You work on a lot of these transactions. What are you and your team mainly working on? Is it these multi-billion, sometimes even squillion dollar deals between large government-related entities? Or is it more entrepreneurial deals like the one we mentioned earlier with Kamal Osman Jamjoum in Saudi Arabia taking over 45 stores of the body shop here in the UAE?
So, Richard, it's a very mixed bag, to be honest. It goes across each of those. So we're seeing government-related entities really driving activity in many territories. They're driving activities to build clusters, or they're looking at building more resilient business models to get the supply chain and that localization to really ensure that, you know, some of the challenges that happened last year across COVID don't happen again when you have shocks. We're looking at companies extending into new markets. You know, the one that you mentioned earlier regarding Jamjoum and Body Shop, you know, coming into a new market, but with the ability to use their existing infrastructure, e-commerce strategy that they already have, and just bolting that on into their existing business model. We are seeing a lot of companies looking at tech, technology. Now, M&A, alliances, partnerships are all very good ways to actually bring in or attract that technology. It can be a faster way sometimes to get access to things that you may not necessarily have the ability to build yourself or want to do yourself. So M&A is being seen as a good way to actually fast track some of the trends that have come out of the post-COVID sort of or COVID period.
Now, most of the deals we've talked about so far have been within the region. Dubai Holding and Miras merging, that's fine. Jamjoum of Saudi Arabia buying the body shops here in the UAE, they're within the region. But some of them are, you could question, is it a Middle East deal or is it a US deal? What I'm thinking of from just a few weeks ago is Angami, the music streaming service. It did a deal to list on the Nasdaq Dubai, a valuation of just over $200 million via, and they're the big trend at the moment, via a SPAC, a special purpose acquisition company. How do you even rank these deals? Is that a Middle East deal? Is it a US deal?
We don't necessarily. I think in terms of what is that deal, that is technology companies here in the region are looking to access capital. They're accessing markets, and they're accessing markets that have a good understanding of their sector. So there is a lot of technology, a lot of investment going outwards from the Middle East into the US, into pre-IPO companies. SPACs is just one way that, you know, certainly in the global markets, you do see a lot of those types of vehicles being used. But it is, people are right now looking for access to capital because there is a lot out there. There's a lot of private capital available, and the deal market is buoyant, not just here in the Middle East, but in Q1 across the globe, because of that availability of capital, low interest rates. So the environment is allowing people to access either new markets or new sources of capital.
And what about money flowing out of this region? Traditionally, we've been an exporter of two things, haven't we? Oil and capital, starting from the early 1970s. Interesting comments over the past couple of days from Khaldun Mubarak, who's the CEO of Mubadala, one of the big sovereign wealth funds in Abu Dhabi, saying India was a big focus. They pumped about $2 billion into Reliance Industries, Mukesh Ambani's empire, over the past year or so. And I remember the phrase he mentioned, "We have invested more in India over the past year as Mubadala than we have over the previous 15 years combined." Are you seeing these deals, Rommel, these large sovereign wealth fund billion-dollar deals into countries like India and others?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But even the family groups, Richard, are looking, you know, family groups, corporates, sovereigns are all looking at how can they access new markets. So Southeast Asia, Africa continue to be areas of interest. People are using UAE as a good pathway or a platform to build into either parts of the MENA region or into Southeast Asia as well. So some of the deals we have seen have been looking at people rationalizing their non-core assets. Others who are, you know, maybe wanting to invest further in a particular segment, but into a business that allows them access to new markets. And we have seen that across some of the deals in the first quarter.
Finally, let's talk about how these deals are done. Typically, if you and your team or investment bankers like you are doing these deals, you'll be on planes left, right and centre. You'll be flying to Riyadh one day and Kuwait City the next and maybe San Francisco the week after. Now, of course, it's all on Zoom. What do you think, Rommel? Is the Zoom or Microsoft Teams, and we're speaking on Microsoft Teams now, is that kind of platform good enough to do deals going forward, or is it a short-term fix and you'll get back to the air miles in a year or two?
I think people have certainly become more comfortable doing deals, completing deals remotely. So, you know, I do expect that will continue. But there is still the element of trying to understand a business, and you can do that remotely, no doubt. I mean, the number of deals that are completed proves the fact that globally and here in the region, people are very comfortable doing things remotely. I think the necessity to travel will reduce, but I think it will start to ramp up as markets open, travel restrictions reduce.
Rommel, we're going to have to leave it there. It's fascinating talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. That's the voice of Rommel Radia. He's the deals market leader at PwC Middle East, talking to us via Microsoft Teams on the Business Breakfast.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.